Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us on how they're growing their business and how we can take pointers from them. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and CEO and founder of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we take tech leaders and elevate them to be the authority within their field so that their conversations turn into clients and their expertise turns into pipeline. Well, I literally have been waiting for this guest to join us on this particular episode since the very first time we met him. He's got such an interesting story of what he actually does and how he's actually growing his business. Now, here's the key thing. Everything you think you know about growing a business in tech, I just want you to park aside for this particular episode, because what we're going to hear from our guest is something different. How he's gone out there and taken what most people consider as an additional thing to do, and that's now part and parcel of how he grows his business. So without further ado, let's just get into this episode. So, you know, because I can tell the excitement that's on my face. Jeff, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself? Just tell us who you are and what is it that you actually do.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, Gary. I'm excited to join. And so I am the founder and CEO of Slap 5. And Slap 5 is a startup company that basically bridges the trust gap that exists between buyers and sellers in the market, where nobody really trusts what a company's marketing messengers or sales guys say. We bridge that gap by turning your customers into your best sales and marketing people by running customer advocacy, customer reference, customer referral, customer content, customer advisory board programs to really mobilize your customers as your best advocates.
I can't wait to dive into this one, Jeff, because this is a thing with trust. Everyone, I can literally see everyone's head nodding as they are listening to this, because right. In our industry or any industry, trust is getting harder and harder and harder to gain, let alone build. So I can't wait to dive into this as we get into the episode. But before we do that, Jeff, let's dial it back a little bit so people get to know you. This is your third startup. What was the spark that led you to the creation of Slap?
Yeah, so the spark was I had done, after my prior startup, after the exit, I didn't know what I wanted to do next, but I had always in my career felt like I should take a swing at being an industry analyst and be on the other side of the briefing table. I'd always been the one briefing analyst all those years. And so I took a job as a senior analyst at Forrester, covering B2B customer engagement, and learned a ton there about what companies were doing wrong as it relates to running customer referral and customer advocacy programs. And then I was guiding customers on how to do it right in terms of how to make sure what you're doing with customers is driving their most important strategic growth initiatives as a company, as opposed to just really tactical things. And then long story short is they tapped me on the shoulder and said, Jeff, we want you to do this for Forrester. And so I came out of the analyst role, took over marketing at Forrester, and built what was then called Forrester Frontlines, the first ever customer engagement and customer advocacy program at Forrester. And it was a huge success. It was a game changer for how we went to market in terms of how we overcame the biggest objections that we would get, how we upsold and cross-selled into our large enterprise accounts. But I knew that it was highly effective and I knew I was onto something, but it was just so labor intensive that I said, this is my next idea. I'm going to now go create a platform to do what I was doing at Forrester, but to do it at scale. And so that was the inspiration.
That's great. It's always sometimes what I always love about what I do and meeting people like you and others that is that what was that inspiration? Because everyone comes, sometimes they fell into it. Sometimes it was something that occurred to them that thought, wow, this is going to be really useful. Very rarely is that, you know, this is always what I wanted to do. This is where I'm going to follow. But so in a sentence or two, if you could please, Jeff, what is the core problem that you see that Slap 5 actually solves for your customers?
Yeah, the core problem is, like I said earlier, it's that trust gap in the market. And it's really hard to overcome that trust gap with just more content and more sales promises and things like that, because buyers have always put way more trust in what their peers and colleagues have to say about working with a vendor than what you say about what it's like for your customers to work with you. And every buyer wants a crystal ball into what life is like being a customer before they want to sign on the dotted line, because they want to mitigate as much risk as they can. So that's the core dynamic that we solve. But then The more tangible problem that we solve is that the ways that companies have gone about trying to address and fill and bridge that trust gap has in the past always been, we have to bribe our customers to say good things about us. And it turns into a very transactional relationship where the customer is waiting for the next bribe to come along. And that whole paradigm has run its course, and people realize that that's not the way to drive long-term sustainable customer relationships where customers are ready and willing to do acts of advocacy for you. And so we've overcome that challenge by really helping our clients turn their customer programs into a two-way exchange of value, where the customers get even more from participating in the program as you do from having them participate in the program. In a nutshell, the value that customers get is they get to build their reputation, they get to showcase their knowledge, they get to brag about their success, and they get to give their advice, all in the form of customer voice.
That's fantastic. What a great way. What a way to turn things around, really. And as you said, getting customer testimonials, getting customer case studies has always been, like you said, even if you didn't realize it, and I certainly didn't until I started speaking to you, what turned out to be a transactional process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I say, hey, you do this for me, and I'll give you this little bit of a bribe to do it. And it works with some people, doesn't work with others. So when it comes to solving that problem, who are your typical customers?
So my typical customers, Firmographic is companies, it's mid to large size tech companies, really strong in SaaS, and even within SaaS, really strong with security software companies. Because if you think about that, anybody with a security technology, their clients do not want to tell the bad guys what they're doing. And so getting customer voice is even harder. And so we're really strong in security software, business application software like HRMS systems, ERP systems, analytics, things like that. So any mid to large, anybody with like 100 employees or more that has a SaaS company is a perfect company. And then within that, it tends to be the people chartered with running the customer programs. It could be a director or VP of customer advocacy or of customer marketing and sometimes customer community, but they're chartered with running these programs and scaling them, just like what I did at Forrester. And even though I was the CMO, this was my baby. This was the initiative I put most of my focus into, but then realized in order to really scale it, I needed a staff member, you know, as well to help run the program. So that's really the Firmographic kind of the type of company and the type of person or persona that we work with.
Gotcha. So it always helps to have a memorable name. And I can't take this interview any further until we discuss this. You've got one of the most memorable names out there. You've got it on your t-shirt. We've mentioned it a few times and it might have just slipped through the net with people listening. Can you share the story behind Slap 5?
Yes. So the story behind Slap 5 is we really wanted our name to represent the promise that exists between a vendor and their customers. And if you think about it, a Slap 5 or a high five is the ultimate expression of shared success. And if a baseball player hits a home run, rounds third base, touches the home plate, goes back to the dugout, there's a whole line of slap five. Hockey player scores a goal to win a playoff game, high fives are right down the line. And so it's shared success, it's team success, because we believe that in order to get your customers to want to help you and make you successful, you need to first make them successful. So it's that power of reciprocity that's encapsulated in a simple gesture of a name.
Yeah, isn't it? The most simplest thing means the deepest. And again, just diving into what you said, is about the law of reciprocity, helping others succeed first, helping others achieve what they want to do, and then you grow via that. And that what we're hearing and seeing from clients as well as guests on the show is this, where we see success are those helping others, not just peddling their services or products, but those almost helping, you know, almost becoming hybrid growth partners to them and helping mm-hmm. them grow, helping their clients grow. So talk right. about growth. You've grown your company in a different way. You use growth strategies slightly different than the typical tech company out there. I want to talk about your community, CustomerX community. It's now over 4,000 people strong. Can you explain a little bit about what CustomerX is and what is it? Why did you start it?
Yeah, I'll start with why I started it. And so what I realized is I was creating a product in an emerging category. It wasn't yet a category. So I was doing some category creation, so to speak. And so there wasn't necessarily a ready market or a lot of companies with budgets set aside for a technology like this. We were introducing a new paradigm, trying to solve a problem in a new way, trying to automate things that has historically only been done in spreadsheets and post-its. So or maybe somebody had built some custom objects in Salesforce or things like that. And so knowing that, I knew that I needed to do more than just try to make noise as a startup in a market that really wasn't a market yet. And at the same time, we were doing some webinars and things like that to try to get our name out. And we realized that we were building a following of people who were participating in these webinars that we were doing that kept saying to us, can you bring all the people that have been guests on these webinars together? Because we'd love to talk to each other. I'm like, okay, yeah. So I started doing that. And then those people started saying, you should do a conference because we'd love to get together in person. And I was really lucky because not every company can pull off creating a professional community like we did. The reason we were able to do it is because there was a vacuum in the market. One, there wasn't one that existed. So these people, this persona had no place to gather. So we stepped in and filled the void. We created Customer X Community. We have a community platform online where people can go and do it. We do monthly events. We do annual conference coming up in November in Boston. And so it's a very active community where people know that Slap 5 is the organizer, just like at HubSpot. People know that HubSpot is the vendor behind inbound, their paradigm shift. Right? And so we don't try to keep that a secret, but we do try to keep it vendor agnostic. We let our competitors come and sponsor and exhibit at our conference. And we don't promote our company directly at all in the community. But here's the beautiful thing that has happened is that most of our leads now come from community members who have been engaging in these events and content for a while. They get to the point where they have a need and they say, well, I should probably check out this vendor that's been represented in this community that seems to be the linchpin that's pulling together this community. So they come and check us out and submit a demo request. And so I go through and I look at our demo requests, and 8 times out of 10, it's from somebody that's been actively engaged in the community for several years that now has a need or now has a budget or now is recognizing that technology can be applied to their problems. And we're the first ones they reach out to. So it's really a community-driven marketing strategy for Slap 5.
I want to talk just to dive a little bit deeper into this, because there's been plenty of groups out there. They try to build, leaders, especially tech leaders, try to build a community-driven brand, as it were. But one of the biggest mistakes they tend to make, or the hole they find themselves falling into, is that they over-commercialize it. Mm-hmm. And, then they start losing it. And then the churn comes and then they do forever. And then they give up on the idea. What advice or insights could you share with other leaders who are trying to build a community-driven brand that they should do or should not do in order to help it grow?
Yes, it's a great question. And people may not like the answer to this, because the answer is don't try to overtly commercialize your community. You need to let it grow organically. And let members volunteer to be in leadership roles. Make sure you're recruiting members to play those leadership roles that aren't just your clients, because you want it to be beyond you. Even pull your competitors' customers into the community. If you really want it to be an organic community that grows over time and eventually pretty quickly starts to deliver value to you in terms of pipeline. So you have to resist. I have never once done an email blast to this community other than to promote community events. But if I put an email blast out there saying Slap 5 has launched this, 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 or this, I would probably get a whole bunch of unsubscribes. Mm. And those that, and then maybe even more that are just ticked off that didn't unsubscribe, but they're like, you're taking advantage of me. So people want that objectivity. They want there's a certain amount of independence. So you have to resist that temptation to just, now we've created it, now let's just market the hell out of the community. Yeah. So that's a big thing. Like I said, it was a shift for some of the people on my team when I, the first year I said, I want to invite all of our competitors to this conference. They're like, what? Like, if we want to be known as the best conference in the industry, we can't be the only vendor there. And so eventually they came along, the vendors came. I've got great relationships with all the CEOs, but we're going to compete like hell when we're in a deal against each other, but we have respect for each other. And the other thing too is, from a financial perspective, I've set it up as a separate LLC to try to maintain even financial independence. Yeah. And so I try to make the community self-funding. And Slap 5, when we put on our conference, Slap 5 pays a sponsorship fee to the community, just like every other vendor does. And then we run it on a break-even basis. And that way we ensure that the Slack 5, it's not like going to Dreamforce where it's Salesforce everything. It's not like going to Inbound or Pulse. You know, Inbound is now HubSpot everywhere. You go to Pulse, it's Gainsight everywhere. Slack 5 has no greater a presence than any other vendor at the conference, other than perhaps I do a welcome talk. Other than that, but I do it, I don't say I'm Jeff from Slack 5. I say I'm Jeff, producer of this conference.
Yeah. It's a great way to build that community and to build authority through association by inviting all your other competitors there as well. And just being that, and here's a word we don't hear very often in competitive business is humbleness. The very fact that you're being humble and not saying, hey, we're the big kahuna here and this is ours and everyone else is there, just drives far more respect from the audience crowd than from the community members. So I love to bring that story up. So thank you very much for explaining that. The other thing I really want to talk about, because you mentioned this, is your webinar series. You've pioneered the Group Therapy for Customer Marketeers webinar series. So can you tell us what's worked so well about that particular format and how did it help you drive inbound leads into the
community? Sure. And that was actually the precursor to the community. That led to the community, as I mentioned earlier. Here's how that came about. Very early on, after I first hired our first customer success person, our leader, she's our VP of customer experience, but she runs our whole post-sales function. And she was managing most of the clients herself at the time. And one day she said to me, she said, Jeff, I feel like a therapist. I feel like I get on these calls, our champions who we're working with to enable them on our technology, they have nobody else. They're a team of one. They have nobody else in their company that they can commiserate with. And they've got all of this huge amount of work that's been dumped on them. And they're just frazzled and they just need to vent. So I spend a lot of my time just listening and let them vent. And I'm like, you know what, Dana, you're onto something here. Why don't we take this problem head on, recognizing that these people feel like they need therapy. And I was a little risky, you know, taking a mental illness type, you know, something that can be associated with mental illness. We were a little worried about that, but we tested it with a small group first. And there was no connotation there or no sarcasm or anything intended. Everybody took it in the spirit that it was intended. So we then scaled it. And so what we did is each month, we would pick a big, hairy topic that every one of our persona, people that fit our persona have. We would select three people that were willing to be panelists on this group therapy webcast. They did not have to be people that had nailed this problem, just people that have dealt with it and have chipped away at it. Because a lot of these problems we were taking on were things that are you've never totally solved. There's always a need to keep chipping away at solving this problem. You're never done. And then we would have everybody join. We would each of the panelists would talk about how they've tackled the problem, what's worked, what hasn't worked. The audience would pipe in and ask them questions. Panelists would ask each other questions. And people absolutely loved that format, the concept, and the depth we got into with those issues. And so, like I said, fast forward now, we're doing them every month. So we got three new people every month that are participating. It was those people that said, Jeff, can you bring us together? Now that there's about 18 of us that have done this after half a year, we want to get together and talk to each other. And so we then created a webcast to bring all of them, those folks together. And that's when those people then started to say, we need to get together in person too. Nothing beats getting together in person. And so that led first to the online community and then to the conference. And so I recommend to people, it's still such a valuable way of people engaging with each other that the most popular track or session type at our conference is the group therapy. We call it group therapy track, a session, time slot. Yeah. We do three time slots a day. And it's basically, we put a table tent at each table for 10, round tables for 10, with a big hairy topic on it. And then people opt in and they'll go there. And if they've had enough of after 10 minutes, enough of this topic, they're free to get up and go to another topic. And then we get rave reviews every year about that format.
No, I love that format. You know, we do a lot of hot seat mentoring, hot seat coaching with particular problems and stuff. But what a great way to do it by bringing everyone together and sharing what's working and what's not working. You know, and I love that. You know, and it's topics, you know, in typical marketing terms, you're meeting with people where they're at right now. This is a challenge we're having right now, you know. And then to a degree, this is almost sort of like what this podcast is about, is what's working and what's not working. So on the continuing theme of what is working before we get on to what's not working, you've leaned really heavily into webinars lately and podcasts. What's your philosophy Jeff, on educational content? And how do you ensure that it builds authority rather than just attention?
Yeah, so I've obviously got a lot of perspectives on that because I've worked at Forrester where I was a thought leader. One of the topics I covered at Forrester was how to establish thought leadership to become an authority around a topic. And I believe companies should always have a thought leadership platform through which they are putting out content that articulates their key points of view and offers a unique, perhaps challenging conventional thinking point of view. And that should be, it's not thought leadership if everybody else is saying the same thing. It's thought leadership if you've brought a new idea or a new perspective, a fresh perspective for solving a problem the way other people aren't. And so the whole thing I said at the very beginning, I do have a thought leadership platform, which is all around going from what I call paid customer advocacy, where you bribe your customers and beg them to do favors for you, to earned customer advocacy, where you create a program that's a two-way exchange of value. And I put out a lot of content myself about that in my platform there. And a lot of people soak it up and compliment it. But what ends up happening, though, I find, is that even though I come at this as already having been an authority in the space, now that I have my vendor hat on and people look at me as the founder of Slap 5, I've got less authority than I did when I was a practitioner putting content out or an analyst putting content out. That happens to anybody that goes from a practitioner role to work for a vendor that serves that practice, right? You have less authority. So I don't rely just on that, but I have to rely because of what our software does. We have to practice what we preach and really put our customer voice out there. So if I have a thought leadership position around this shifting from paid advocacy to earned advocacy, yes, I'm going to articulate it myself, but I'm now going to augment it with customers of mine talking about reinforcing it and giving their perspectives on how they made the shift from paid advocacy to earned advocacy and why it was so important and how their customers are much more engaged for the long term than they were when they were in that more transactional program. So again, it's practicing what I preach by really infusing the customer voice into everything we do. And so even when we do webinars now for Slap, we will hardly ever do one where it's just Slap 5. There'll always be a customer or two or three talking about the topic of hand or the challenge at hand that we're capturing in the webinar.
Yeah, so they get to hear the voice of those who are actually working it rather than just you on that. But I think it's great because, again, you know, I've mentioned this before and you've agreed with me on this. It's authority through associations. It's who right. You're surrounding yourself by. And by their association, you gain authority from that. And it's a very underutilized method of growth. And quite frankly, a lot of people who have tried it get it wrong. They just do it the wrong way around of doing it, you know, trying to take over or whatever the case may be. So talking about what's wrong, we've all hit landmines, Jeff, when it comes to growing our companies.
Yep.
What have you tried in terms of marketing or sales or growth that didn't actually go the way you wanted it to go?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So the challenge we've had is, if you think about what we do, it's a paradigm shift. And it's also a paradigm shift is usually a culture shift within a company. You're trying not just to get one person on board with a new way of thinking and a new paradigm. You need that person then to help you get their whole marketing team, their sales team, their customer success team, and their products team all on board with this new way of approaching customer programs. And so that has been a constant challenge for us because a lot of people still come in with very tactical goals, right? I need to get 50 peer reviews this quarter. And I'm like, okay, but why? Because my CEO is asking for it. Okay, why? Well, because we're going into a Gartner Magic Quadrant evaluation next year. Like, okay, so why? Because our CEO thinks that we're not going to get into the upper right of the quadrant unless we have 50 five-star reviews. I'm like, okay, well, that's not true. But, now we know why you're doing something. But what we're trying to do really hard, and it takes a lot of effort, is to really help our customers shift their thinking to become more strategic and approach their jobs more strategically for them to try to connect their work with to help drive the strategic growth initiatives that the company has set forth at a C-level. And so let's say, great example of a strategic growth initiative that we help a lot of companies solve. A lot of our clients are shifting from being a portfolio of point products to now, or having a legacy point product to now wanting to be a platform or suite with a lens on top of it all that brings it all together under one login, but that means repositioning themselves in the market from being known as one thing to what they were known for from a legacy perspective. Like one client I have, they did backup and restore software, but now they want to be a full security suite. Backup and restore was sold to one person, like a low-level IT person managing desktops in the help desk. But being a whole security suite, now they have to get at the heart and mind of the CISO. Very different approach. But best do that with customer voice, because now you work with the CISOs that you have gotten on board with this whole new approach, your whole new suite, and the risk factors that it now helps you divert and eliminate, and get them talking about why you're now a full suite vendor and not just a backup and restore vendor. So things like that, that's been our challenge, I would say, is, you know, the deeper we go in crossing the chasm, right? Uh-huh. You know, the early adopters were, everybody bought into what we were doing. Now we're in the early majority, and we're working with those that are get it or can be convinced, but there's still a lot of people that aren't ready for this paradigm. So I'm always thinking from a marketing perspective, from a sales perspective, how do we, if we really want to scale the company, we're going to need to get into the late majority and late adopters stage as well. And so, but I still feel the best way to do that is to really showcase the outcomes that our early adopter customers have achieved, so that we can then convince the laggards that you too can do something and you won't be the first one. Here's all these people that have done it before you. You probably admire a lot of these people. Listen to what they have to say. Because I can't just tell them, you're a laggard. You know, they don't want to hear that. I got to lead them to the promised land. I can't criticize them for being where they are with their current beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the key thing, isn't it? I mean, I was talking to one of my clients late last week, and one of the challenges that he did not realize he had was the fact that, you know, he'd been in business for a number of years now, but there was no real sales asset with regards to case studies or testimonials. Mm-hmm. They've done a great job. He's grown tremendously well over the last 24 months, but, you know, they might have a couple of little paragraphs pasted on their website with regards to testimonial, but there was no real what I would call a sales asset, where there's a case study or a handful of case studies say, hey, almost a hero's journey. I was here. This is the challenge I had. This is why we chose this, and this is where we're at the moment. And just sharing that experience, or not only of, hey, it worked for me, but the experience of what it was like to work with them through the course, right, or continue to work with them, you know, which is very, very important. So when it comes to your goals there, what are your revenue or impact goals for you or Slap 5 for the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, so we our revenue goal is to double every year. And so we've been doing that. And so we're looking to double. We're on track now with 2 days left and 3 days left in Q. But we're on track right now where we are, and with a strong pipeline to be able to double this year. So we're pretty excited about that. And again, with cost of customer acquisition for us is like negative. I mean, because it's mostly done with the community, we don't spend a lot of money on marketing other than sales heads and sales commissions. So, I mean, that obviously adds into that. We don't do a heck of a lot of the outbound marketing or interruption marketing. It's more developing the community and more getting our own customer voice out there. So that's our goal, you know, to double this year, double next year. Eventually, I see Slap 5 being a nice acquisition for a marketing technology company or a customer success technology company or a customer community technology company. But I don't aspire to go public or anything like that. I would rather join forces with a strategic acquirer that wants to accelerate the vision that we've painted out. He's the success that we've had growing at 100% a year and wants to put some lighter fluid on top of that fire.
You know, I totally understand that, because that's exactly the sale that we end up selling our company to. When we grew that, it was somebody, rather than just handing it off and say, here's the keys and here's everything, it was, hey, let's get together here and let's just grow it. Let's take what we have here with our, and what we've built, and put it into your company and let that grow, utilizing it. So I totally understand that, rather than just, you know, as they go, going public and making it massively huge from that. So that being said, this is your last kind of loaded question, Jeff. You know, this is a guy, I ask every one of my guests a loaded question. What piece of advice would you give to a leader or a founder who's what I would call stuck in the weeds? You know, they hit that plateau, that glass ceiling, 1 million, 2 million, and they've just hit that rut. What is that one piece of advice you'd say to enable them to feel freer, to smash through the weeds, smash through that grass ceiling, and to continue on their growth?
Yeah, so the one piece of advice, which is going to be difficult coming from me since I don't always follow this advice. It's very easy for me to get caught in the weeds because I just want to do everything. And if I see something not working, I jump in and try to fix it. And so, but nevertheless, what I could tell you, what I'm working on and aspiring, which I would recommend to others, is to get from that 1 million to 2 million plateau, 1 point something to 4, you can't be doing everything. And most importantly, you're having to go from mode where it's founder-led sales to a professional sales rep-led sales. And so I've had to be willing to let go the fact that I would be in every deal and building that credibility in every deal, telling my Forrester story in every deal. And now to hire a couple of really strong salespeople, give them the runway and the independence to go make business and close business on their own, but trust that they'll pull me in if and when is needed. And so I'm lucky to get to the point now where there's probably 50% of my deals where they feel like they don't even need to pull of their deals. They don't need to pull me into because they feel like the customer is on board. The product sells itself, honestly. And when we talk about all of our AI capabilities, our AI agents and our automations, people are blown away. And so we're not meeting the founder's vision component of the selling cycle as much as we did in the earlier days when we were bringing a totally new paradigm to market. And so, well, that's what I would do is you got to be willing to let go, especially start with sales, because that's where scaling comes from. And then when I've got three on my sales team, three great people that they'll do a few of their own campaigns around outreach to like to nurture some deals that have gone quiet on us. But for the most part, they're taking all this inbound interest and converting it at a very high rate. And so I'm staying out of their way and just letting them bring me in as needed. If there might be somebody that says, maybe we're in a head-to-head deal with a competitor and they really want somebody to articulate how we're different philosophically and how that translates into our product roadmap, or if somebody really wants to hear about our product roadmap in detail, because that's the one thing I haven't really let go of is our product. I still wear the product manager hat, but it was more important, I think, to let go of sales earlier than this. In the next year, I want to really bring somebody in to run product management as well. So it's not just me.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great piece of advice to end on there. I think it's just knowing what to let go of, how to let go of it, and just to set you. Otherwise, it's unscalable. You know, as I said, as you just said, you founder-led sales, founder-led marketing. It doesn't matter if you've got the best product. If you're stuck and you can't get any more sales in, right. You can't scale, it doesn't matter. So your great piece of advice. So Jeff, thank you very much for your time today. If people wanted to get a hold of you, potentially work with you, know more about what you do, potentially you can help them, what's the best way of getting a hold of you?
Sure. So you can find me on LinkedIn /Jeff Ernst. You can find me jeff@slap5.com. And so those would be two great ways to get a hold of me. And I would just encourage anybody, if you're a go-to-market person and you're like the client that you described earlier that just doesn't have any customer proof, reach out to me. I can tell you, no matter what size you're at, it's important. And there's different ways of filling the gap, even for a smaller company that's not ready to bring in a whole platform. There are small things you can do to start to overcome the objections and nullify some of the competitive FUD that gets thrown at you just by doing some easy, low-hanging fruit ways of mobilizing your customers. And so I'm always the analyst in me who loves doing 30-minute inquiries. I'm always willing to talk to somebody who's sort of stuck and really wants to figure out what are my options in terms of where do I go from here? I know I've got this problem. What we're doing today doesn't seem to satisfy it. And you're looking for some quick and dirty ways that you can go about it.
I will make sure, Jeff, that those links are in the show notes so they can come get straight over to you. So once again, Jeff, thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your insights and your expertise. I'm sure the listeners and the viewers got a great amount out of it today.
Well, thank you for having me, Gary. Really appreciate it.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per usual, my usual sign off, but by no means, even though you heard it before, doesn't mean it's less important. If you picked up something from Jeff today, please make sure you like it and put it in the comments so other people can see what you've picked up that's valuable to you so that they can potentially use it as well. But more importantly, we grow by standing on the shoulders of giants, and the giants like Jeff and the other leaders on the show. So please make sure that you share this episode and other episodes so that other people can grow as well. So until next time, again, thank you very much for joining us for this one. Until then, keep working hard, keep striving, but more importantly, be profitable. And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.